You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
I saw this app.
I got a hit.
In the new limited series, DTF St. Louis, Jason Bateman, David Harbour, and Linda Cardellini star as three suburbanites who spice up their love lives.
Wow.
Don't miss the new HBO original limited series, DTF St. Louis, premiering March 1st on HBO Max.
Ready to relax in your dream bath retreat without the stress of figuring out every detail yourself? At the Home Depot, your bath upgrade is covered. Shop fully designed rooms and curated bath collections to go from inspiration to transformation fast. Savings of up to 40% will make it easier on your budget. And find everything you need, from tubs to toilets and all the tile in between, to bring your vision to life. The Home Depot. Dream baths built here.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the How to Hunt Deer podcast. I am one of the co-hosts, Dan Johnson, and across from me, about 250 miles, Jason Thibodeau. Jason, how we doing, dude?
Pretty good. Another Monday, and I'm still kicking. It's just chilly here, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll tell you, I woke up this morning, I set my alarm for 6 a.m., okay? And I went up, I started working, and instantly something went wrong on my computer. And now I thought I was going to have all of this stuff done before we started recording today, because it's set now at 7:30. Right. And I thought I was going to have all this stuff done. And now I am already behind an hour and a half into this week. And so now after this, I got to go back and do what I was going to do, which pushes everything back later, which means that I probably will be working till about, instead of, my goal was to be done working by the time I picked my kid up at 4, was now I got to work till like 7 or 8 tonight. So
Love it. Yeah. Completely understand that.
Yeah. Shotgun. And it was a shotgun start, 'cause once the kids were up this morning, it was boom. And then I had to, like, I was trying to do two things at one time.
All right.
Anyway, that's just life, right? That's just life.
It is. And obviously, the more kids you have, the more you're strung out with it. So,
yeah. Right. Right. All right. You want to hear some good news?
Sure.
This past week, I had, I got one email from an organization that they track. I don't know how they do it. I didn't really read too far into it, but they track analytics, they track impressions, they track social media talk and things like that. And I guess, I don't know how, but I guess the How to Hunt Deer podcast has been ranked number 3 in the best deer hunting podcast category by this one company. Number 1 was Wired to Hunt, right? That's probably the most popular one. And then another guy I know, the Truth from the Stand podcast, was number 2. Both great podcasts. You know, if you, I'm sure if you're listening to this, you know about them. And then us, the How to Hunt Deer podcast. So that's pretty cool that we've been doing a good enough job to be recognized. Now, I don't know if that was a monthly thing or a weekly thing or how that works, but as of right now, we're number 3, dude. That's a good position to be in.
Yeah, you know, if you're not first, you're last. So shout out to Mark.
Exactly.
No, that's good. You know, I just kind of sit here sometimes, you know, and you wonder, what advice you're actually giving. And sometimes, you know, it's not even the advice that you're giving. It's just the conversation, you know. Sometimes it's a time killer. I mean, for me, back in the day when I started listening to podcasts, it was a lot of times I was sitting on a mower, mowing for hours on end, and I'd get tired of listening to music, you know. So I got into it that way. Obviously, I'd been deer hunting many, many years before podcasts existed. So it's a refresher, though, to say the least. And exactly. And maybe we don't have the best advice to give, and maybe that's what they like about it.
Yeah.
Stay away from what Dan and Jason say.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, but here's the second awesome thing that happened. I had a guy reach out to me, and, you know, and this is more relatable because it's an actual person reaching out to me. And he said that he found last year, he found the How to Hunt Deer podcast.
Okay.
And he said that it literally motivated him to get up and buy a bow. Like, he started talking about it with his wife, listening to this podcast, and his wife was like, dude, you got to buy a bow now. And so he bought a bow. He's here in Iowa, and he bought a bow, and he started listening to this podcast, and he was just saying nothing but good things at how it's extremely relatable. For not just a brand new guy like him, but it's detailed enough to where it, you know, once you step out in the woods, you can take the principles that you've heard. Like, I guess we do a good enough job to where we explain things. It's like, okay, I'm in the woods, now what?
Right.
And then they're like, okay, so Dan and Jason, they said this. Dan and Jason said this. And that was, dude, you know, I don't want to, you know, puff my own feathers up here, but that felt really good to hear, man.
Yeah. Well, yep. And I think that's just the thing I've even taken away from having these conversations too, is just the simple fact that there's a lot of reminders in it. You know, you get complacent after so many years of doing something that you actually have to step back and go back to woodsmanship and go back to just the fun and exciting. And it's not always about the biggest or the most, you know, it's sometimes it's just about the experience. So,
Yeah. And then, so I was just kind of curious and I asked him, I said, hey man, there's some times where, you know, guys like us, we've been hunting for 20 years, okay? And sometimes people who have hunted very long periods of time, it's just second nature to them at this point. And so I asked him the question, do you feel that we ever lose you sometimes when we start talking about strategy or thermals or wind direction? And initially he goes, yes, but once I get into the woods and I start to listen, like understand what you're talking about.
Right.
So, I don't know. We talk about thermals and wind direction and access routes. If you have never been in the woods and have tried those things, you may be lost in some of the stuff that we've said, but once I got out there, it clicked for me faster because I was able to understand like, oh dude, these guys said this. And he was actually able to see it. So you pair the information that we give with the real world experience and boots on the ground. And he's like, dude, it's very informative and very helpful. And he's like, thank you. And so I just wanted to let you know and all the listeners know that, you know, we like doing this. Our goal is to help people get better at hunting deer, or just motivate them like what we did with this guy to get out, just to get out there. And so if you are a new hunter, welcome to the club, my friends.
Right. Yeah. No, and that's a good point, you know, that the guy was making. You know, what I used to do when I listened to these podcasts is, because there's, you know, everybody has a different view on it, a different way that they want to do it, but I had a calendar, I'd sit on my center console in my truck and I'd mark down jobs as I was doing them. And as I was listening to podcasts, I might stop in the middle of a job and run over and write notes down about like, hey, he said this, or hey, try this gear, or hey, check this out, or here's another podcast to get another feel for. So, you know, it doesn't hurt to jot some notes down, whether it's in your phone or on a piece of paper, and take that to the woods with you. So,
yep, absolutely. Absolutely. So I just wanted to share that information to you and let you know that I guess what we're doing is making a difference.
Okay? Yeah.
It's making a big difference in this world. Yeah. Okay. What were we going to talk about today? What are we talking about today?
I was kind of thinking if we touch base on some of these non-resident huntings, how you go about it, where your destinations are and stuff. And if there's different species, I mean, I know this is how to hunt deer, you know, but if there's some goals that you have and how you try to pursue those, because I'm seeing, you know, a lot of these states for me as a non-resident are becoming a little bit trickier or harder to obtain. You know, for years you've had to put in for points to hunt elk in many states. But most states now are pretty much, a draw of some sort. And yeah, same with mule deer. Mule deer have come that way too. So I just thought maybe that'd be a good start for somebody that was learning how to hunt deer. They might take something away from learning how to do the application system and everything.
Yeah. So here is, we need to put constraints on this conversation, because most of the mule deer, elk, antelope, I'm not saying all of them, but a majority of those application processes are closed already.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So
right,
let's keep the conversation to whitetail non-resident, because there is a lot of states east of the Mississippi where you can go on a non-resident deer hunt and buy over-the-counter tags.
Right. Right.
Right. So, like, I believe, for example, we both head west for mule deer. I think the places where we go, it's closed already. You can't, you cannot put in a lottery, even for whitetails. So anything, I believe even Kansas, like if you want to go to Kansas for whitetails, it's closed already.
Yep.
So
yep,
if you haven't bought your preference point, or you haven't bought an application to try to get into those tags, a majority of states with multi-species big game are closed.
Right.
Now, there are states like Kansas and Iowa, for the most part, who are big whitetail states. You're not going to get into those states this year or next year, or maybe even the year after that.
Right.
Right. And so that's where, like, there's a lot of planning and preparation that goes into, like, I guess logistics as far as dates and times and draw odds and things like that. So let's talk a little bit about your strategy. And then after that, I'll talk about mine. So how do you go in to a year planning hunts and planning like trips to different states?
So, I mean, a lot of it for me just depends on scheduling for the year with jobs and everything. But if most seasons are, you know, opening September 1st or October 1st, I kind of look at, is it feasible for one? Do I have enough points for two? Am I going to be able to allow the right amount of time for the right amount of time that I need in that state? Meaning, do I want to hunt the rut? Do I want to hunt early season? Is it a velvet opportunity? So we actually had this conversation yesterday in the car drive. We were talking about Illinois, and Illinois is an over-the-counter for non-residents. There is no application or nothing. It's kind of a pricey yep. tag. It's a pricey tag, but I mean, you still get to come to a pretty decent state. I've read a lot of comments lately, you know, where guys are feeling Illinois is falling apart and losing its big buck, stature. So for me, I would probably preference to live in Iowa, to where I could drive across to Illinois, or drive across to Wisconsin, or drive across to Minnesota, you know, and go to one of these other states like that. But in all reality, yeah. is there a goal? You know, do I have X amount of whitetail states that I want to hunt? You know, am I looking at a size of a deer? You know, if I want to get into Iowa and I want to get into, you know, a potentially bigger deer, bigger age class, bigger rack deer, how long is it going to take me? You know, am I looking at a 5-year plan to go hunt somewhere in Iowa, or am I looking at a 3 to 5 year hunt, plan to go hunt in Kansas? You know, and there's other great states too. I mean, Ohio and Indiana, there's places like that that maybe it doesn't take as long. Or there's other places where maybe the tag's a little bit cheaper. I mean, I know if I go north into Wisconsin, if I did some legwork and everything, I could probably be in a really good spot for a less amount of money than what I could if I was a non-resident in Illinois. It's a little more expensive, but I mean, you still have the opportunity. So a lot of that goes into it. And then am I going by myself? You know, is this a Is this a me out on my own? Another thing that factors in, and I think this is kind of my out-of-state preparation, am I staying in a hotel? Am I taking a tent? Am I camping out of my truck? What do I have to take for food? You know, I kind of make a checklist as far as all that stuff going forward. So
Yeah. I'm going to back up just a bit here.
Yep.
And I like where you're going with making the checklist for gear and stuff like that and budgeting money. Obviously, those are things that have to be thought of when you go. Because, like, I don't know about you. I used to be able to do this. Like, I did this a couple times for a turkey hunt back when I was younger, where it's just like, I got a call from a dude. He's like, let's go. And I was like, okay. I loaded literally a laundry basket full of clothes and camo and my shotgun. And that was it. No food, no nothing. I might have even threw a sleeping bag and a pillow in my truck and I just went. Right. I can't do that anymore. Okay.
Right.
Here's what I'm going to recommend. Whether you take it down on notes, what I would do is I would write it down on like in a spreadsheet, like an Excel sheet. Or what you can do is you can go to places like Hunting Fool, or you can go to places like Go Hunt, right? And you can write, like, you can manage that all there. But here's what I would do. If you say, I live in Michigan, I want to expand my season into some other states like Ohio or Indiana, just because they're closer, or Pennsylvania, whatever the case is, I would say, write down that state, then write down what day, like what the, do you need to draw? Do you have to apply for that state, or is it over the counter? And then make another little column for that. And then, so like you would come to Iowa or Kansas, I'm not sure what other states have applications, for whitetails in the Midwest region or in the Eastern side of the state, or like say like Kentucky or whatever. And then you would put like over the counter or apply by or preference points by, and then you can just start managing it there. And then you can drop down and go, okay, if I want to hunt Indiana, I need to know that I need to have my tag bought by here. Is it over the counter? Yes or no. Here are the season dates. And then that way you have all of that stuff right in front of you. And then let's say your goal someday is to hunt Iowa, and you hunt Iowa. It's going to take you 5 years in certain zones to get into the state. And then you hunt, you are buying preference points for Iowa while you're hunting an over the counter state. Then 1 year when you do draw Iowa, you don't go to Indiana or Ohio or wherever. You come to Iowa and then you check that box and then you start all over in Iowa. So the whole point of that is if you want to start expanding your season and taking more out-of-state hunts, I would say that needs to be managed by preference points and or documentation. There is a lot of places, like you can go to Missouri, Illinois, Oklahoma, Ohio, Indiana, Pennsylvania. I believe those are all over-the-counter states. You could just shoot from the hip on those states if you wanted to, and that would be fine. But from a logistics standpoint, if you want to get into a quote-unquote bigger buck part of the United States, you might want to manage that. But, at the same time, you know, if there's any state right now that is still a sleeper state for deer, it's probably Indiana, right? I feel dirty just talking about this.
Yeah, I know.
You know what I mean?
You kind of called me out. I think it was last week or the week before when I was naming towns and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I walked away
spot
from
ruiner,
it.
Spot ruiner.
I'm like, oh, I just roasted it for everybody else. But in all reality, you know, I want everybody to have a good experience too. So if there's something that I can learn or give a little information away, that's okay by me. Because you know what? At the end of the day, you still got to put the time and legwork in. Otherwise, it's not a slam dunk. You know that.
Yeah. Well, I'll say this, like, I can tell you right now, if you say the name of a town in Iowa, you got to remember that town for 5 years. You know
Absolutely.
What I mean? It's but I would feel a little bit more uncomfortable giving specific locations in an over the counter state. Right. Because anybody can go there. Cause I'll tell you what, I think that, what was it? I think it was one podcast started talking about Kansas. It wasn't me, but there was another podcast or something out there that had a big reach. And all of a sudden, applications went up 40%.
Holy cow.
Yep. And so, or what happened in Tennessee, where there was a YouTube channel went and started hunting Tennessee. And then that next year, like all these people started showing up to this public ground in Tennessee. Uh-huh. And so you do got to be a little bit careful. We do have to be a little bit careful about what we say, because there are locals out there who are getting pissed right now about non-residents coming to their state. Right. And dude, you know, rightfully so. Yeah. I understand, but at the same time, dude, it's public land. Anybody can come and hunt it. I know that we as content creators do have a responsibility to manage what we say and how many details that we give away with that.
Right.
But at the same time, like, I don't know. Once I started hunting out of state, I had so much fun and I can't see myself going back. And if you do it at the right time, you're not running into people.
Well, and I think that's part of it too. And that kind of goes into with the experience that you want. I mean, guys know where, you know, certain spots are.
This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
And that everybody that has any sort of mapping software and stuff, I mean, they can share pins and stuff, and that person shares their pins, and then that person, you know, and it just goes from there. So I don't know. For me, going back to it, you know, part of the non-resident or part of the out-of-state hunting for me is, what is the experience I want? You know, if I want to go hunt the open plains, or if I want to go hunt the big hardwoods, or if I want to kayak in somewhere, I mean, that kind of eliminates some of the states also, you know? So, I mean, once you narrow it down and you have your point system and then you have your over-the-counter states, you know, you just kind of weed through that. And so now, like this year for me, this year's elk application. If I don't draw an elk tag this year, next year or this season, I'm going to be hunting whitetail in Illinois, and I might look for one of these close by over-the-counter states. And then there was no planning in that. First and foremost, it's going to come here in the next month or so. And then I'll break it down. Then I'll start deciding, okay, well, what's feasible? Where can I go? But next year is going to be a mule deer year, and it's probably going to be South Dakota. So that's kind of how same thing. I kind of have a little graph and I kind of check it off and go through it that way. But what's the experience? I think that kind of at the end of the day is very important as well.
Right. So here's what I got going on. So I did something last year that I normally don't do, and I took two out of state trips because I drew both tags. I didn't think I was going to draw South Dakota again. I thought it was going to be a prep, because ever since they reduced tags and went to a application, then I thought I wasn't going to draw it because I drew it the previous 2 years. Right. Uh-huh. And so my guess is that this year, I won't draw it again. However, I don't want to hunt two non-resident trips. So I bought a preference point instead of applying for Kansas. I bought a preference point in Kansas, and then I applied for South Dakota again. So if I, this is just an example of what we're talking about here. If I draw South Dakota, I'm going to hunt South Dakota. But if I do not draw South Dakota, I'm probably going to take a non-resident trip to a state that is within really close driving distance to me that touched the state of Iowa. And I'll give you four: Illinois, Wisconsin, Minnesota, or Missouri.
Yep.
And so it would have been Kansas, but Kansas is now no longer over the counter. right now. And so I believe North Dakota is, but I don't have any experience in North Dakota right now. So there's four states that touch Iowa that are all over the counter. And I believe that if I do not draw South Dakota, I'm going to go visit one of those states. It's not going to be a big trip. It would be like a 4-day trip, and that's about it.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with it, too. I'm going to dive into a couple of these close-by states. Obviously, there's not I don't have the desire to go to some as much as I do others. So, I mean, Indiana's on my list. That's a potential spot. Wisconsin's a potential spot. Maybe even Ohio. I know it doesn't touch Illinois. It's a little bit further drive, but there are some states that I would like to get to. I have a friend that, you know, hunts in Indiana, and he's hunted there several years, and it sounds good there. So, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, plan accordingly for all of this stuff. Plan in the future. If you're young and you can do whatever you want whenever you want, or you're not married or have zero responsibilities, and you can do whatever you want whenever you want, dude, shoot from the hip. That's fun too. But if you're like us with families and jobs, responsibilities, the more planning you do, the better.
Okay. Yeah. Yep.
And I just want to say there are a ton of non-resident opportunities outside of Western hunts. The further west you get, you're going to be playing a game that it took me a long time to figure out. It can even be complicated at times, right?
That's very complicated. And that's where, for me on my end, I had to start in some of these easier Western states, quote unquote. And it's because I wasn't into the point system and stuff right away. And then, I mean, once I've started figuring that out, it's still complicated because each website is different. All the different zones and areas, it can confuse you real quick. You know, so there is a lot of research that goes into that first and foremost too. So.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. The other thing that I wanted to mention here is something that a lot of people, I think there's oversight. They don't think about this. And there are certain states, number one, there are certain non-resident states that offer multiple buck tags or multiple tags. Like you can go to, let's say I want to go to Texas. I want to hunt public land in Texas, or I want to go try to find some ground to hunt in Texas. Shit, I think Texas, you can get 2 buck tags and 3 doe tags. Yeah. Oklahoma, it's 2 buck tags and 4 or 5 doe tags or some crazy, like it's crazy, right? Yeah. You come to Iowa, every deer is a tag, okay? Yeah. And you got to pay for that. It's not booklets. I believe certain places down south where if you want to extend your rut, right? If you want to hunt the Midwestern rut and then wait a month and then go down and hunt the Alabama rut or something like that, you can do that. The thing that I wanted to mention though real quick is, although we're talking about non-resident hunts here, I feel like there are still lots of opportunities in your own state that a lot of people are not taking advantage of.
I 100% agree. And this was part of the conversation that with what we were talking about yesterday on our car drive, is there is multiple spots in this state of Illinois. You know, people, you know, they bash it all day long, but there are still multiple spots that I have not been to that I would just love to be in to hunt. And I haven't taken those opportunities in 25 plus years of hunting, you know, so don't overlook that either. And that's a cheaper tag. That's a cheaper expense, a cheaper trip overall. So.
Yep. 100%. Now here's, I want to elaborate on that. It's not just number one, if you're a resident of a state, you're going to get cheaper tags than non-residents, first and foremost. But here's what I'm getting at is multiple species, right? I'm going to talk about Iowa. Turkey, whitetails, obviously. We have good pheasant hunting in certain spots of the state. We have good fishing. We have good, trapping is obviously, you know, depending on what your goals are with trapping, raccoons are overpopulated in just about every state. So you're going to catch raccoons at some point. You can do coyote hunting, you know, as coyotes become, or predator hunting becomes more popular, which it is, like this, the thermal optics game and night hunting is becoming more fun and things like that. And so the deer tag situation in Iowa is as such where, dude, I can go out hunting. In Iowa, I get 2 buck tags. I get my archery tag, and then I get a firearm tag. Okay, so that can be during the shotgun season, or it can be a firearm tag for the late season muzzleloader or early season muzzleloader. So I get 2 buck tags. And then depending on what county I hunt in, I'm able to hunt as many does as the county has tags. So in the county that I live in, sometime in August, I have to buy my buck tag and my doe tag. So I get my 2 tags, that my archery tag and then my doe tag for this county. But then this county is very highly populated compared to the rest of the state. So I only get my 1 doe tag. They all sell out. But then where I grew up in Iowa, it's damn near unlimited, right? So there's always like 1,000 extra doe tags that are always sitting on the table in that county. So if I wanted to, I could hunt deer and kill a deer every week of the season. A doe.
Right.
Got to be specific on that doe. Then after I get my fill of shooting archery does, I can go into a shotgun season and I can have fun with my buddies and I can do deer drives. That's not like necessarily what I like to do, but it's there if I wanted it to, or if I want to do an October muzzleloader season, or if I want to do a late season muzzleloader season, or pick up a crossbow for the late season muzzleloader season, or use my bow again during the late season, it's because it's a primitive weapons tag. You can do that, right? So yes, it's like going to another state is awesome. It's a new experience. I love doing it. At the same time, I personally am not taking advantage of all of the other opportunities that my state gives me. And I know that happens across all states within the country.
Yeah. And I think there's one that it really hit me when you started naming all the species and stuff, is that we're divided by the Mississippi River, and there's phenomenal duck hunting on that river. And once you're out there duck hunting, and this is a little pointer just for anybody listening, if you're out there duck hunting, you can actually deer hunt some of those islands. And knowing where you're at, between Illinois and Iowa is obviously a big crucial part because of the way it divides through the river, but you can scout while you're duck hunting, you know, and you can have a blast duck hunting. I personally have a pond at home, and I could duck hunt it, and I don't take advantage of it in my own backyard, you know. So there's a lot of stuff within the state. And if you get into those islands on the Mississippi River, it's a blast. It's fun.
Yeah. Just this is going to sound stupid because this is a deer hunting podcast, but I feel like I want to start getting into running bank poles.
Yeah.
On the river that's near my house. And I don't have a boat, but get a canoe or something and get put in that 1 boat landing on the river and then, you know, come down and do another boat land, like to another boat landing, then have somebody pick me up or my wife pick me up or something like that. And I think that would be extremely fun. But there's just a lot of opportunities there. But at the same time, like me and you, we're deer hunters, right? The only reason we do turkey hunting and all this other stuff is because we can't do deer hunting all year round. Right.
Right.
And so, just think about that. Think about, are you using all the tags in your state that you possibly can? I know a lot of guys out there who are really only interested in antlers. That's great. I will say that, you can still go out and you can have an absolute blast going on a doe hunt. This might be an opportunity to take a new hunter out or a kid out. Here's what else I like about the state of Iowa and what they've done with their tags. So they have a youth season, just like the turkey season here starts on Friday, this upcoming Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But if my kids don't tag out, those tags are transferable to any season.
Okay.
So I can bring my shotgun or my daughter with me shotgun hunting, you know, maybe after school or something like that. And we'll, you know, try to get on a bird on the way back to roost and things like that. And so you can take that. If you strike out during the youth season, you can bring that into whatever season you want. Now in Iowa for the deer tags, you can, if you strike out during youth season, you can bring that into the archery season, but you have to use a bow during archery season.
Right.
Okay. Or you can hold off to late season muzzleloader and you can use that tag. So that tag is good for whatever season is in throughout the entire season. And right. So they've made it so kids can become more involved in that. And I really, really like that new law change.
Yeah. We don't quite have that, as far as here in Illinois, but, our youth season ended yesterday. Right. So they get 4 days to hunt. They get Saturday, Sunday, 2 weeks consecutive. And then our season starts and then we have 5 weeks basically to hunt. And ours is all a draw system on that. And I think now you're allowed up to a drawing for 3 tags in here. And it used to be 2. And I don't know. I don't know when that changed. But, so as far as using those tags, there's a lot of times. Like I get into, December is when the first draw is for our turkey season. Mm-hmm. So I always forget. And then I get into that second, draw, or I get into that third draw. And like this year, I was so busy with everything else, I forgot to draw, period. So I was literally at the over-the-counter buying what was left. And luckily, I hunt in 3 or 4 different counties, so I can actually apply where there was tags left. So I haven't utilized that at all. So this is a great point to, take advantage of what's in your state.
Yeah. Okay. Back to like non-resident hunts. We had this conversation, and a lot of the conversations that we have about what happens in our own state, like when do you want to hunt? Okay. So if you're like, for me, I mean, I live in Iowa. Hashtag blessed, if you want to say that, right? Uh-huh. So I have some decent ground. I have some good deer on it, and I'm really excited to hunt Iowa every year.
Right.
I don't want to miss out on the best times to go hunt Iowa because I love the Iowa rut. And just like you probably love hunting Illinois in the rut. You don't want to leave your bread and butter. So what I've always done is I've tried to make an October hunt work or, if I am thinking about, let's say I do not draw South Dakota this year. So now I have to think about what I'm going to do for my non-resident hunt. Obviously, I go west during October for mule deer. And then this year I hunted Iowa, didn't get the job done in Iowa, and then went to Kansas and killed a buck in Kansas this year. I had that opportunity. But if I didn't go to South Dakota in October, I would probably focus more in Iowa during the October timeframe and then try to get the job done early. So then I can go to a state where I don't have any experience, but rely on the rut to help me be successful, not my knowledge of the terrain, if that makes sense.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting, lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping, banshee flying, Space Mountain launching, galaxy rewinding, what's the whole network galaxy rewinding, fireworks igniting, world of other worlds, for whatever you love. Infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing about with these application periods and stuff, with them being over right now. I mean, fairly soon whether or not you're going to go to a certain state or not. So you can start putting weight into a nearby state that's over the counter. So you can start doing some mapping. You can start looking at, hey, do I have time this weekend to maybe take a quick scouting trip? Is it close enough? Because that's something I've done before. I've ran over to Iowa and scouted for a quick weekend on something that I was going to potentially hunt. And then I put those scouting missions together too. So if Iowa if I can draw in 3 to 5 years wherever I want to go in a certain region, well, then I'm going to take each year and make a scouting mission out of that too. So
Right.
there's no wasting time, I guess. Let's put it that way. So once you
Right.
know, you got to start putting your work in if you still plan on being, able to go out of state.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of it is just research at this point, from this point on. I mean, you got to obviously, everybody knows about Onyx, HuntStand, any type
Right.
of mapping software. You can do your research on campgrounds. You can, obviously, hotels. There's a ton of things that, like, if you have a topper on your truck, my first 5 years to South Dakota, other than when the weather got really bad, I was sleeping in the back of my truck or in a tent. You can do that too. I've done everything from pop a tent next to my truck or pop a tent, a mile and a half into the wilderness and do that. I've done that with elk before, any species. As you get into, but you have to know your rules and regulations, and that's what I'm getting to, is certain places like Iowa, you cannot camp in a parking lot or sleep in a parking lot. You cannot camp on the public ground. It has to be at a designated campground, hotel, or a lot of guys actually, they'll go to a Walmart parking lot, and you can sleep in a Walmart parking lot, believe it or not. So there's all these different rules that you have to know or take advantage of. And so these are rules that you're going to have to research and that are different for every state.
Well, and that's what I was going to say. Don't waste time with it. If you want to go somewhere, start making some phone calls, call the Department of Natural Resources, talk to a biologist, start getting some information ahead of time. I mean, I got notebooks full of phone calls that I've made to Western states and, destination states, and I've got all sorts of areas and zones, and that was without, using any mapping software. So then once I get that information that I can use there, then I start pulling out the mapping software, and then I start looking at narrowing down what looks interesting to me. So that may help too moving forward.
Yeah. Here's awesome. So I heard a little, I heard about this place in Utah, or not, excuse me, not Utah, excuse me, Idaho, where a guy, he went on a hunt one time and he's like, dude, there were mule deer all over. It's high country. It's beautiful. I put tons of stock on, tons of stock. And he was like telling me this thing that this trip he went on 5 years ago. So I was like starting to do all of this planning for this mule deer hunt in Idaho. And I was almost ready to pull the trigger and something told me, hey, reach out to the Department of Natural Resources there and talk like a wildlife biologist and just ask them some questions about that unit in that area. Well, I'm glad that I didn't pull the trigger without calling them, to your point, because they had a like number one, fire decimated the entire area and it was followed by huge amounts of winter kill. And so he goes, that was 2 years in a row. I wouldn't be coming out here because the population is so low. It's nowhere near what it like. I think he said like he guessed an 80% reduction in the deer herd in these areas. And so I was like, okay, thanks for telling me that. And I never went because of that information. So the more knowledge that you can get from people who know the land. The other thing I want to say real quick while it's on my mind is locals, right? Some locals will tell you to go kick rocks, but there's also times where locals will give you some good advice, like especially if they're non-hunters and they're not hunting, but they are I don't know, they're farmers. Or they work the land, or hell, you go into a gas station and they see you're wearing camo, or you see they got a sticker on their truck. And I joked one time, and I was like, he had a bow sticker, like some kind of bow hunting brand on the back of his truck. And I was like, he looked at me and goes, how you doing? I said, I'm doing all right, man. I said, do you have any questions where the bi or I said, do you have any idea where the big deer hang out? And he's like, well, when I used to bow hunt, this is where I would go. Okay. And so he didn't bow hunt anymore. And, but he told me that if you go here, this is where I have always seen them. And this is where I, you know, this is where, and I went and I saw deer. So any little bit of communication or conversation with a local or anybody like buddies who have previously hunted that stuff. Now there are some unwritten rules about how much information you give versus get, you know, things like that. Right. So, the more information you have, the better. The more people you talk to, the better. Some information is like when we went to Nebraska.
Yeah.
And every single person we talked to said there was a problem with mountain lions.
Right.
We didn't see any mountain lions, but the way the locals talked, there was a mountain lion. There was 400 mountain lions on the single property that we were hunting.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and so, I mean, what you're saying is like, you know, I'm going to say this from both sides because I think it really gets thrown out there with a negative vibe, you know, that that residents hate non-residents so much. They don't want them in their state. And I honestly don't, I don't think that that is absolutely true because think about the residents that own a little mom and pop gas station or think about the residents that are making money when you go there, you buy gas, you buy food, you do all those things. Or just your tag costs. I mean, that helps keep costs on other things down too. So I think sometimes people look at that and they're like, oh, we don't like those non-residents or whatever. We're just going to tell them there's 500 mountain lions. Well, I've never seen a mountain lion in 5 or 6 years going there. But to the other point, like with the DNR and the biologists and stuff, I will say for almost a fact that 100% of those people that I've called, they have given me the information that they have. Mm-hmm. And that's what their job is, you know? So I can't say that they don't want me to come to their state because, you know, I help pay their salaries too, you know? Right. So it's, I wouldn't be afraid to make those extra phone calls. I wouldn't be afraid to pull up to somebody at the gas pump and, you know, BS with them for a few minutes about, hey, what do you think about over here? And you know, believe it or not, maybe it's only 50% of them are going to give you a time, but 50% might be what it takes to make a good hunt out of it.
Yeah, dude, I'm telling you, back in the day when phone books were still a thing, I drove through, I forget what state it was, but I picked a phone book out, took it with me, and I made phone calls to addresses that I would look up their name on a plat map, and then I would call them, and I would say, you know, hey, I'm getting ready to plan a hunt out here. I'm really sorry for calling you, disturbing you, blah, blah, blah. What's the hunting like out there in your area? And if they hunted, they were like, you know, or if they didn't like non-residents coming, you know, but I talked to a couple guys who were like, yeah, you know, I don't own this property. I just, you know, I ranch on it. But you know, here's a place that maybe you should start looking the closer to the river, or here's a big chunk of timber over here that's public. Go check, take a look at that. And you could get some good information from just backdooring a lot of things, but you know, is what it is. It's up to you how much work you want to put into that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And I will say, I mean, to that point, I mean, we're kind of just talking public land, but you know, in a lot of these states too, they do have websites to where you can actually be a member. And so for X amount of dollars here in Illinois, there's one I can think of it's $25 a year and they will actually link you up with landowners in certain counties that you've selected. And then they have different seasons that they allow you to hunt their property for X amount of dollars. And there's different fees. There's different hunt types. You could do a week, you could do a yearly lease. And so there's options that as far as that goes too. So, I mean, we could talk on the budgeted end and try to do, you know, public, and we can also talk on the other spectrum of things where maybe you want a little bit more out of it. Maybe you want a little more secluded to yourself and you do want to hunt maybe some private ground. So don't be afraid to look into that as well.
Yeah. And money, as we all know, money solves a lot of problems. And if you want to go through a guide or an outfitter, that's on you, dude. I mean, you do whatever, you know, you do whatever you want. I always like the challenge of trying to, I like the challenge of going and finding a new place to hunt and boots on the ground. I don't necessarily know if I'm in the spot. Like now, as I get older and I start going out west on a species that I haven't killed anything yet, yes, I think I would love to maybe use an outfitter someday for an elk, maybe, or a high country mule deer, a little bit more aggressive terrain or whatever, maybe, or a guide. But I'm in the time of my life where I still like to figure that stuff out on my own.
Yeah, so that's kind of like our elk application this year. It's through technically through an outfitter. He owns the ground, you know, but it is not guided. It is not, we're not lodging there or anything like that. He's not going to be with us. You know, he's given us some references as far as, you know, a number to call for a side-by-side, local place to stay, butchering, all that stuff. But as far as the hunt goes, we're basically paying like a trespass fee so we can go hunt elk on his property. And that's it. You know, so we decided that was a cheaper option than paying the full outfitter price. But we thought maybe that the experience would be better than just being out on public ground. And it's because this is going to be my first elk hunt if we draw. So,
yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Okay. So, you know, I, is there anything really that we need to talk about gear wise? I mean, obviously tents, hotel rooms, like cooking stuff is all, I guess I don't want to get too terribly focused on gear because I feel like if we're talking about hunting deer, you're either going to go to a state where you just need a pair of boots, you know, like if you're going to go to South Dakota, Kansas, Nebraska, and maybe do some spot and stock on some deer, that's great. But then at the same time, if you're just going to another Midwestern or Southern state, you already have the gear for that, like a saddle or a hang on or something like that. Then, I mean, is there a conversation that needs to be had about gear?
Well, I mean, I don't know about you, but you know, early on when I started going on any sort of trip, I would overpack. And I could never just get my system right. And it didn't matter if I was hunting, you know, whitetails or mule deers or whatever it was. I always would overpack. And more so now, the older I get, I don't have the energy to move all that stuff around. So I kind of become a minimalist in that way, you know, but to that point, you're going to live and learn through that stuff. I mean, you're going to find one year that you needed this because it was colder or you didn't need that because whatever. And I think really making those checklists that first year, that second year, and go on and just like you're doing your application, keep notes on that stuff. Keep notes like, I did not need this, you know, and always keep in mind too, in any out-of-state hunt, you know, you want to be safe. You want to be warm. You want to be able to, you know, shower if you need to, you know, whether it's at a state park or whether it's at a hotel. You want to be able to do that stuff if you have to, if you get bloody, muddy, and dirty. So,
yeah. Or you could do what I did when I went to Nebraska one year, and that was I took a wash rag into a cattle tank.
Yep.
And those cattle tanks, you know, they look like they're really gross and stuff, but the water's clear. Maybe there's organisms in them that I didn't know about, but I took a washcloth that I had brought and I got it wet in the cattle tank and I was scrubbing my face and my armpits and all my stinky spots and I made it work. So, that to me is fun type of stuff.
Yeah.
Right. So,
All right. I've enjoyed just the roughing it to me. Sometimes that's more the trip than anything. You know, to just get away from the technology, get away from the big city life for a minute and just be secluded. You know, it's funny because I'm so adamant on just like being clean. And years ago, this is just a funny story that I thought it would be a great idea to buy one of those portable showers. Okay. So, you know, it's a pop-up like a tent and whatever, and it's like, say, 4x4, and then it's 6-8 foot tall or whatever, and then it's got one of those solar bags and everything. And this is the honest to God truth, Dan. Like, I'm such a junkie on some of the stuff, I've never used it. I've owned this thing for 3 or 4 years, you know, so like I say, you know, you can overpack, you can overbuy, and just budget, you know, what can you spend this year? Can you spend $500? Can you spend $1,000? What is it? Because none of this stuff is cheap, you know, so... So if you have all the deer stuff, don't go waste your money.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I think that's a good conversation for today. Any final thoughts before we shut her down, Jason?
No, we're getting close. I mean, the weather's start getting nice here, and we're going to be able to start working on some food plots and stuff. If you haven't been out, you know, to get out with the kids and do some hikes and do some late season scouting here. I'm sure bucks are starting to sprout a little bit on their heads. Yep. I would imagine most of them shed antlers by now. I mean, gosh, I've seen a couple pictures where some are still hanging on, but outside of that, yeah, work on your equipment, you know, work on your gear. You know, if you're into saddle hunting, man, practice out of your saddle, practice shooting out of it. If you're deciding to do something crazy and shoot a recurve this year, practice with the recurve. Get to know the thing in and out, and then it becomes an extension of your arm. So,
yeah, there you go. All right, my friend, everything that Jason said, just stay organized, plan preparation. The better that you do that, the better experience you'll have when you do decide to go out of state. Outside of that, huge shout out to all of you for taking time out of your day to listen to this podcast. We don't have a social media page for this. I guess most of it just gets posted through the Nine Finger Chronicles page, but I think we might start one here pretty soon. Outside of that, everybody enjoy the spring, get some kids out turkey hunting. You get out turkey hunting, find a new adventure in your state to go and do. And then outside of that, man, good luck out there. Jason, until next week, man.
All right. See ya.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.